Garrett Edelstein here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. Alternative rock group Man Friday is a brainchild of Zimbabwean-born musician and entrepreneur Rob Burrell. Heavily influenced by the natural backdrops of their Southern African setting, Man Friday turned their debut album, The Orchid, from 2002 into a musical that premiered at that year's Grahamstown Arts Festival. Man Friday released four albums in London before returning to South Africa to tour Waiting for the Flash in 2009. It was their following album, Train Rides and Radio Play, in 2013 that saw them sign a deal with V2 Records and relocate to Holland, where they entrenched themselves in the music scene. Man Friday enjoyed great success in Holland, with Train Rides and Radio Play charting at number 5 on the national charts. With their latest offering, Bridge North Road, Man Friday prepares to cross over a quarter century of their unique brand of conscious rock. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Rob Burrell from Man Friday. Where do we find you in the world? What's happening in your life and how are you doing?
You find me at the moment in Cork Bay, Cape Town. A little bit upset because I thought I had more five roses tea and I'm out. So I'm actually drinking rooibos right now, which I don't normally abide by, but I've got a man must do what he's got to do. I'm in Cork Bay without my normal tea. Living in Zim though, which I'm a big Zim. I was born in Zim, born and bred, did my time at Rhodes though. So I got my drinking stripes in South Africa in the late 90s, and been kind of living a dual life between being a musician since kind of varsity. And it's kind of the band that refuses to die. Man Friday has been, like, this year will be our 25th year playing music, which is kind of crazy. And we're going to be talking about Bridge North Road, which is our sixth album that we've released over that sort of time. So every sort of 3 or 4 years, another album kind of bursts forth onto the scene. And I say it's life because, like all of us now, I'm 45. I'm a father of two. And as of a few months ago, two more because I got remarried. Okay. So I'm a father of four. And like all of the band, you know, we've got these alternate lives, you know, because we've got, you know, wives and mortgages and other jobs and stuff. And so it's been quite an interesting journey. For your 20s, I went wholesale. The band went wholesale into full-time music in London. And that's kind of where our sound was, I think, largely forged, as a sort of slightly grittier folk rock combo. And then we've just sort of never stopped, which is fun. And, you know, it's been an incredibly, I would say, successful, not in this filling up stadiums sense, but in terms of people we've connected with and just how we've had this real, like, loyal, almost cultish fan base for over two decades. And so this album that's coming out now, it's an important one because I kind of think like a midlife crisis-y record is pretty genuine. And in your 20s, it's quite hard to figure out what you're writing about because, you know, your worries were like, do you have enough red wine and can you make rent? And as long as those things were kind of sorted, you were sorted, you know? And So I find that songwriting and working on this album with everyone else has been pretty intensive, and it's been quite real in like the hipster sense, you know, like this is a real record, you know, because we've had real stuff to deal with. So you find me today pensive and excited to get this all out, but definitely not 22 and raring to jump in a minivan and tour the States with another band. Like, you know, I'm old and tired and wise.
Where does the name Man Friday come from? What does it mean?
Okay, good question. So our very first time we got into 5FM, when that meant something, like that would be 98, you know, it was like a big deal. We were all huddled around the radio. There was, I can't remember the DJ's name, but they had this new music section. You'd post in your demos, which are on tape back then, post in your tapes and cross your fingers. And we're all huddled around. And this one track we had, which was called Robinson Crusoe, but Robinson Crusoe was one of the tracks that we had on our very first kind of demo. And it was the one that was noticed. So it was kind of like this lucky charm. And it was like all Man Friday tracks. It was like a GDE minus C kind of vibe. Very simple folk rocky stuff. And when it got into radio, that's the first time I thought, man, this is just the whole journey of just getting to this moment. It's been so much fun. Maybe I want to do more of this. And so we got a bit of funding for our very first album from that demo, and we got onto radio for the very first time from that demo. So when we decided to call the band Man Friday, at the time we were called, get this, Mind Your Head, which is like it's such a student name, right?
Yeah.
Such a student band name. And I said to the guys, we can't be called Mind Your Head. It sucks. Like, and I said, let's make it some sort of something related to Robinson Crusoe, because it's been a kind of a lucky track for us. So we thought about being called Crusoe or a whole bunch. And then I don't know if you know the story, but when Robinson Crusoe gets shipwrecked on the island, there's a native islander on who's been, you know, who dwells there, and they become friends. And it's that character. I said, hold on, let's just choose this character. Let's call ourselves Man Friday. And then why call us Man with Two N's was just like a cool thing to do. And it's actually been ridiculous because people can't find us on Spotify because they search for MA Single N Friday, of which there's some like crazy rapper from Detroit called MA Single N Friday.
Okay.
So if you ever start a band, don't start some whack spelling of it. Just like call it Coldplay without a K, you know?
Okay, so you've mentioned some of the journey, but let's rewind. How did you guys meet? Was it a varsity? You mentioned this is a sixth album. So from the beginning to where we currently are, the hybrid journey version of Man Friday.
It would be the sort of varsity era, which was, that album was called Looking Up. And we still play some of the songs off that track, that album now. So I think the songwriting was okay. We're all terrible musicians, you know, really bad. And then it was a shift from post-university to where do you want to go in the world? And I was like, I think I want to play music. So let me go to Cape Town. And so all of those band members, with the exception of my guitarist, Justin, he was moving to Cape Town for like a grad placement job. So I said, well, I don't have a job, but I'll move to Cape Town and we'll continue playing music. And so there was the varsity format, of which one survived. Then I did Cape Town for a few years and was, you know, pub jobs and living on the breadline. But we were playing a lot. And that's when we got this funding. And so the next album called The Orchard was, we got, I think, £4,000 from an anaesthetist in London whose demo tape, like, yeah. And so obviously this guy was going through his own kind of like rebirth, and he thought, I fancy being a record label, and I've just found these dudes. And he wrote to me, and I remember being, you know, in those era of university when in the labs, like the computer labs.
Yeah.
That's where I was. And I remember pressing send and receive on my student number at ru.ac. That's an email address. And this email came to me and said, hey, my name is Dr. Pat, and I'm an anaesthetist, but I've got a love for music, and I heard your demo. I'd love to finance it. So that's quite a cool start. And yeah. So I've always been a little bit of a dictator as the sort of front man and kind of band leader. So I said to people, like, either you're with me or you're against me, you're going to leave your jobs, and we're going to move onto the banks of the Tiavatuskloof Dam, which is just outside of Cape Town. And we're going to live like Chili Peppers did in that house. We're going to go and live on the banks for 2 months, and we're going to record like this definitive record. And everyone did it. Everyone did it. Eh? So they all left the jobs. And we lived out in this little apple farm, hence the name The Orchard. And we wrote this 11-track album. And it was a super visceral time of my life. I would have probably been 21, 22, as with the rest of the band. And we had this run quite a tight ship. Like every day we'd get up, we'd go for a swim in the dam to this raft, kilometer round trip. So we were all kind of getting a bit buff. We would play volleyball after breakfast for an hour. And then it was like work, work, work. And I even said, girlfriends are only allowed out here on the weekends. I was like, I was serious. Eh? And so we did this record. And again, if I'm being honest, if I listen to the tracks, the musicianship, probably me at the forefront of being terrible, you know, at my craft. I hadn't like picked up the guitar when I was 8 or been taken under some pianist's wing when I was 11. I was just really kind of mostly from like gospel roots, you know, playing like Scripture Union songs. That was kind of like but the songs, again, something in them, I'd say. And that album, right at the end of it, I was going for one of those swims, and I had this idea, why don't we turn this album into a show? Because having been at Rhodes, I was quite close to the Gravesound Arts Festival and what it meant.
Yep.
So I came back from like the dam, and I said to the guys, dudes, this album, why don't we turn it into this theater production? And they were like, what do you mean? I said, well, we'll sing a song, and then I'll show some slideshows in the background of like my life growing up in Zimbabwe, because that's interesting to people. And it was interesting because Zim in 2002 was massively topical. Like, it was front page news in most countries because of the, like, what was going on there politically and the farm invasions. And it was quite a topical place. So I said, hey, why don't we parlay this into something interesting? So I wrote to the festival, and Graham Sun Festival was like, yeah, we'll have your show. And so with this, like, this album and this kind of quirky little theater production, we did that show, and we got spotted by a talent scout from the Edinburgh Festival.
Oh, wow.
And that's kind of the reason I tell the whole story is that's how it springboarded us into, like, what causes a band to pack up its stuff and leave its cozy, like, Capetonian shores or whatever and go, you know, into the wilderness. And that was it. So I said to the guys, listen, this dude thinks there's a good show. Yeah, let's move to England, do the Edinburgh Festival. And then that was the second rebirth, because everyone listened to me that time. Drummer was like, no ways, man, I'm staying here. Bassist was like, yes, yes, yes. And for the last month, he's like, I can't go. So I actually ended up leaving with said guitarist from university, Justin. Now we've been together for whatever, 4 years. We left without a bassist and a drummer. In the meantime, we sorted one out. And Ryan, who started to play bass, was with me for like another 15 years. And we did the same sort of show at Edinburgh Festival, and it did really well. So at Edinburgh Festival, there's 1,500 shows, yes, of which 7% break even. And we broke even like by like the fourth or fifth show. Again, it was the timing and the sort of fizziness around the topic that, if I'm being honest, that's what drew people to it. So yeah, and that brought us onto British shores, and that's began a decade of really probably like the epicenter of music in all of our lives, because we were all young and free and didn't have any commitments, and we spent that decade trying to break it into break the London scene. In that next decade, Sunburn and Wonder, which is kind of like a cult favorite, and the album Blue Sky Science was our third record that came out, and on that You Bring My Beat Back was also quite a big hit. Now, when I say hit, you know, this was like in the hey at the side of the bar on the way out, we sold 80 CDs last night kind of thing. You know, we're properly on the breadline, and I think we made a bit of a tactical mistake in that it was so seductive playing to the Antipodean crowd. So when we went north to North London to these like real gritty British rock gigs, no one knew who you were. It was like tiring and cold, and you lost money on the gig. And, you know, and it was tough being a full-time musician. So you would kind of have this like skew towards, hey guys, we've got a booking at the Walkabout. They're paying us £1,000, and it's going to be full of all of our friends, you know, drinking snake bites and talking about the Springbok game. I think that was a big mistake, is kind of we got seduced Antipodea, and we spent too long camping out there. And I mean, a lot of the bands, it's what happens, you know, when the bands kind of reach some modicum of success in South Africa, they go and like try and make it in London, but they're kind of booked up by other South Africans that are living there that want them to fill their pubs or their things. And because we had like no network, like no real, oh, my uncle works for BMG, that shit didn't happen, right? So, so I think that London was a great time, but we didn't quite break out of that pen. And we got to some big gigs. We played Shepherd's Bush, Empire, Clapham Grand. We sold all these places out. O2, what's it called? The O2 Academy back then.
Yes.
But, you know, if I'm being brutally honest, we didn't quite shirk this kind of nostalgia rock that I seem to keep writing, because I missed home and I missed Africa and I missed Zim.
Yeah.
And then people resonated with it. They're like, the song's about a sunrise over the Zambezi. The song's about a... And I wouldn't say in a cheesy way, but in a subtle way that kind of rang true. And that's kind of what Man Friday Music has been. And so to conclude your question on the sort of the history of it, we did after the London days, I moved moved back to Cape Town for 4 or 5 years, and then wrote Train Rides and Radio Play, which was kind of the beginning of family life and kind of settling down. And in order to record that stuff, it was tricky because I was in Cape Town, Justin was in London, our drummer had got spotted by Peter Jackson, who did like Lord of the Rings, that dude, for his CG talent, and he was poached to Weta, which is the Weta Digital in New Zealand. So everyone's all over the world. And then a lucky thing happened. During like the last couple of years in London, I had a friend from kindergarten, and I had this weird business idea to try and solve all of these migrants that are not living at home, and of which we were one of them. How do you get value back to your mom or your sister or your whatever? Yeah. And so we started this company called Mukuru, and I was like employee one, and Ryan was employee two, and I coded this thing on a laptop on my double bed without a chair. And the oddest thing happened is this went from like one staff to two staff to eight staff. to 10 staff, and we got customer base, and we were just so lucky, right time, right place, part of things. But what happened is Mukuru just kind of exploded. And this week, I think LinkedIn wrote, I think it's ranked number 6 company to work for in South Africa.
Oh, wow.
And it's almost a 20-year anniversary. And this kind of like, hey, let's just do this, the idea exploded. And so that added a lot of success in the financial sense, which gave us the firepower to keep Man Friday going. But it added a lot of strain. I think we went from 8 employees to 200 in about 12 months. And now, we're in like 16 countries. I think the Cape office has about 800 folk in it. And so that's been a really, really interesting journey. And it kind of, I've had this dichotomy kind of push me, pull you of trying to keep a business with a lot of hope and sustain that. And then also trying to be true to myself, which is, I really want to play music. But the one has kind of led to the other. Being that's why the band refuses to die, is that we've got the resources to keep going. And so after the Cape Town era, I had my first kid, Jake, and I, like all people, you struggle with your first kid. And I said to my wife, let's go back to Zim, because man, that's where my folks were. And so after Train Rides and Radio Play, went back home, and that's a 5 albums done or whatever. That would be 2014. So we're catching up to where we are now. Mukuru was at a size where we had got like CEO and CFO and all the C-suite guys. So I thought, okay, I can calm down now. It'd been a really fun, but quite an exhausting decade. And headed back to Zim, and then started sort of pottering around the white picket fence era. And so I started to write these sort of white picket fence-y songs, which was the first 7 tracks on Bridge North Road. You be careful when things are going well, right? Suddenly wheels came off everything. I suddenly went through a divorce, which I didn't really see coming. And I speak about it now just because it's been, there's so many people that go through them, and they're tough, and they're really tough.
Mm.
And so after that happened, I sort of retreated to London to pen a few more songs about going through that. Fight For Me, Can't Leave, and I think and Hurricane, which are 3 of the tracks. This is what's so interesting about the record, is that there's kind of 7 white picket fancy songs written over maybe as many years, like over 7 years, that these songs, finding these little gems that were crystallized. And then I go back to London and work on 3 more of like what has happened to my life. I've got 2 kids at this stage, and then COVID hits. And as COVID hits, so this is now, we're like 2019 or whenever it was, COVID hits at the back end of 2019. That's right. 2020. And, I'm thrust into like sort of single dad mode, which is actually super enriching. You know, I found it, being a single parent and having 2 kiddies, and what that does to a man, some parts of it were so rich. And I remember just feeling, super alive. Cause you're going through a lot of pain. I'm sure we both were, it's not easy for anybody. And in the middle of all of that, I kind of meet this kindred spirit who's also had a almost like a mirror image outcome. And over the next 2 years, we start dating, and there's this kind of strange rebirth that happens. And so I go back into the studio and I write the song Caravan in the Mist, which is about the two of us disappeared in this whole caravan. And that's when I kind of realized, man, like I'm going to be okay. And actually life is going to be okay. And things are good, and I'm in love again. And so track 11 is kind of is this new rebirth song, which is a great single. Yeah, so this is a really important album, because just by chance, it's got these kind of 3 phases to it. And we actually got married at Africa Burn 3 months ago.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you've seen any pictures or heard of the Big Red Heart, but that was my heart. Like there was a massive, like 14-meter sculpture of a massive red heart. And we got married in front of it with 100 friends from Zim and around the world. So you look back and you look at the various states of mind you were when you sang a song and then recorded it. And then, to be clear, I don't want to write another album like this, because it's almost killed me. Now that it's done and we are, I'm so proud of it. And also kind of understand a bit more about the human condition and how there's just so many new chances and new beginnings and those tough times, I mean, yeah, they serve some purpose. And if I'm honest, getting this album out That's going to sound terrible, but I cannot wait for that thing to be done. It's getting launched on Spotify, on all the DSPs. And I really want to see the back of it because, COVID, like in everyone's lives, put this strange pin in the natural process of getting stuff out. It was quite weird to sit on these tracks and not release them because you're waiting for the right time and all that. And so I really, I want to get this thing out, and I never want to see it again. Like, I just don't want to see this album again. But it says,
still perform it, but I mean, not necessarily experience the experiences that you needed to go through to create it.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like being pregnant for 3 years. It's not right. You just want to be pregnant for 9 months, like not normal, like all the other albums. I feel super blessed as to where it all landed, and in the end, it was kind of meant to be this very strange arc. And I think a lot of people can relate to a midlife crisis, and that's what I was talking about earlier, like writing relatable content. If I had to look back at our earlier work, you kind of it's slightly contrived. I mean, I think you still felt like love and loss and all those things in the same way, but you're a bit young and you know you're not quite sure what's going on. So it's kind of like what David Gray's White Ladder, not that I'm remotely comparing myself talent-wise to David Gray, but it had a massive impact because he was singing about like the money running out and the difficulties of being away because he's touring. And it was just like, this is a working man's album, Same thing like with Bruce Springsteen. It's like, it's working man's music. That kind of people, and it's just how tired you fucking, he's tired and he's there in the mirror and life's hard.
Yeah.
And I just think, for the first time, it seems like Man Fridays, in terms of on the authentic meter, this is our highest score. And it feels good, actually.
So you mentioned about the creator writing the songs. So diving back into that, some of the songs took a while to write or process or the experiences. But when you write a song, is it an easy process of writing a song, or do you find it challenging?
So I do sort of believe, even though, I've got fairly traditional views on things. I do kind of believe in this unexplainable power of the muse, or that sort of divine inspiration thing. Because my songwriting process is very selfish. I generally, Man Fighter is not a jam band where someone comes in and says, "Hey, look at this dude. I've got this bass lick," and the drum's like, "Oh, well, let me work on that with a ka-ka-ka, ka-ka-ka." And it's slowly, which is a sad thing because you get great bands that are jam bands, come with the riff and they build it together. I'm quite a selfish songwriter in that I need to feel it, and I'm huddled away in a corner in my room with my iPhone on recording, and then I'll come back to the band and be like, guys, I've written this song. That's historically how it's happened. And you need a special type of band member to be cool with that. Generally, just good folk with low egos, where I'm probably a bit of a dick with a big ego, that kind of goes together quite well, those combinations.
Yeah.
And so, when I am writing, most of the songs are written in about 3 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes. It's very weird. So I'll have my piece of paper next to me, a guitar on my lap. I'll be sitting at a table typically, and I'll have had like a little ditty on the guitar. Kind of whenever I'm at home, a bit bored, I'll grab it off the wall and I'll play maybe for 30 seconds and hang it up and continue doing something. Then like next day, grab it off the wall, but I'm never singing anything. I'm just feeling like a lick. Some sort of progression. And inside the progression, you've got all those six notes that meet the next six notes that meet the next. And in that sort of randomized mass, there's suddenly a melody that you're like, this is interesting. And then suddenly, like, it's like fishing. There's like a bite and then a bite. Okay. And then suddenly the line gets a hit. And then I write the whole thing lyrically and the melody and the chorus and then it's done. So it's kind of weird. And it's nothing that you train for or get taught, or it's a bit spooky, especially the meaning of the song. Like I didn't sit down and say, I really would like to write a song about, and then lyrically, when you take a step back, you realize this has got this common thread and it seems to be about this. Okay. So it's awesome. And it's very cathartic. Even if you're not going through that same feeling, you can identify with someone else's loss or someone else's predicament. And and in the end, I'll then take that bare bone skeleton back to the band, and that's where they piece together, and they obviously will be like, why don't we shorten that or lengthen that, but generally the track is there.
Okay. So now, speaking of songs, I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 3 days, 3 months, 3 hours, 3 weeks, I know and I recognize your answer will be different every single time, And I get that. But if you had to push play to five songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, what would those five songs be and by whom?
Great question. Okay, I like the Bonfire by the Hunna. So that's HUNNA. And Bonfire, it's like a rude London rock band. Great. I dig that. Probably Please Forgive Me by David Gray, because it's a classic for me. Crash Into Me by Dave Matthews Band. I'd have to say Murder of One by Counting Crows. It's the last track on the August and Everything After album. And my last pick would be Keep Your Head Up by Ben Harden. What's it called? I can't remember what it's called. I think it is Keep Your Head Up by Ben Howard.
Oh, by Ben Howard. Okay.
Ben Howard.
Cool. Great list.
Those are my five.
Okay, brilliant. Are you going to be working on a next body of work moving forward, or you're just focusing on this for now and then seeing what flows?
Yeah, I think what if there's anything that would change is working on albums. I think the world is changing, and I have to say it, like, I kind of feel that this album, massive project length stuff, I also feel a bit fatigued from it. So
yeah.
I think what's left is I'm actually building a great studio at home. And I think it's going to be a conduit for other local musicians around Southern Africa to come and record. And actually, it's built on Bridge North Road. So Bridge North Road, the name of the album, is the road I was born on.
Okay.
The house I still live in. And so Bridge North Road Studios is going to, I hope, be a fantastic place where we unearth new music, and we, you know, you're at Africa Burn and someone comes into the open mic night and you're like, oh, wow, please fly up to Harare and let's capture that. That's the idea. And so with now access to that level of studio, I just hope I'm sort of feeling it, you know, if you build a lap pool in your garden, you're going to swim lengths, right?
Yes.
Or if you buy a mountain bike, you're going to go for it. So yes. I'm kind of doing this in a way to be, to reinforce my resolve to not stop playing music, because it's been a quarter of a century. And I almost think the fact that we haven't been derived by like the stadium filling success, which then creates that was successful, now this is not sort of mentality. We've always just been hovering at around this level where we just never wanted to stop. And so building Bridge North Studios, I think is going to push me into action to wander through in my undies with a cup of tea and record that idea, you know?
Yes.
Hopefully there's no one else recording at the same time when that happens. but that's the idea. So to answer your question, I'm thinking, you know, if my health stays intact, then another 25 years of Man Friday music. And I think the sad shift is your brethren that you play with. So Justin and Michele, you know, the guys that you played with for so long, live all over the world now. And so you do find sort of soulful, spiritual breaking of bread that happens because you've been through times together, and you remember that gig, and remember that festival, remember that crazy chick at the, yeah, that sort of thing. You don't share that with like, not session musicians is probably the wrong word, but maybe it is the right word.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm in Cape Town and I need a great piano part, I'll call up Emmanuel and he'll come in, and these guys will be the best musicians I've ever played with. But something is lost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In that sort of bromancy time at the tiller thing. And
yeah.
I don't know if I'll find that again, and maybe that season is over, but and I miss it a huge amount. I play with session musicians often because of geography, and they're all fantastic and we put on a good show. But on the off chance, like for the wedding at Africa Burn, the band flew in from all over the world. And when we play together, people, you see both versions of the band, they're like, man, that's like, you know, that's proper fire, and we can see it, and it probably sounds even technically worse than when you're playing with your session folk, but there's just that brotherhood, and it's a cool thing to be part of.
As a finishing message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
Firstly, thanks for having me. It's been cool, man. I really appreciate it. I would say I'd give Bridge North Road a spin. I think especially, it's not really curated for the 16-year-old driving towards the nightclub on a Friday. It's actually all of us sort of midlife crisis-y 40-somethings that have had a bit of white picket fence and probably a bit of heartbreak and have probably struggled through life a bit. And I think it's a cool, resonant album in that sense that people will identify with it. And the fact that it just ends off on this high note of like love found and not lost. And Yeah, and I think it's ability to reboot your story and be the author of your own narrative at any kind of stage in life.